So, what I'm trying to tell you today is refreshing a memory of a 1.5-year-old journey, which Freifunk Aachen shared with the Wi-Fi for You program, and the price they had to pay is to endure me as a member of their community. About 1.5 years ago, we became aware of the project Wi-Fi for You, which was supposed to fund open wireless access in the public domain of municipalities within the European Union. And we have been looking at the process since then, and we would like to point out how it's broken by technical specifications, why this introduction is not a friendly one anymore. To give you an overview of the talk, I would like first to present the idea of Wi-Fi for You and why the European Union is doing that, the plan they had to implement the program, why it actually really matters to the world we live in, 13 ways it went wrong, what has been done, what can be done, and the sources I used to in the talk, so you can actually look up all the information that I'm telling you about. So, since it's a European Union project, it is, as usual, a part of a behemoth. It's part of the so-called Europe 2020 strategy that the European Union implemented in 2010, and they formulated goals that they wanted to achieve by 2020. Those are goals that you would like the European Union to actually have, which is that they would like to raise the employment amongst the European Union to 75% of the people aged from 20 to 64, that they have research and development goals where they wanted to spend at least 3% of the European Union's GDP in research and development. They had climate change and energy goals, like relying less on energy which is not from renewables, to get the greenhouse gas emissions 20% lower than 1990, and to increase the energy efficiency. They wanted to boost education, and they wanted to work against poverty and social exclusion. Within this, they formulated the strategy that we all have come to enjoy and that made Europe, I think, part of digital life and everyday life now, which is the digital single market strategy. Can you still hear me with the noise going on around? I'm not entirely sure because I'm getting the noise directly. Okay. So the digital single market strategy was basically followed the concept of bringing the ideas of the European Union single market to the digital realm, which includes the four freedoms you usually have within the European Union, which is a free transfer of goods, of capital, of services, and of labor, which is people moving around and working wherever they want, get paid in euros and all that stuff. You know this stuff. The next thing that you have is that the digital single market as a strategy was implemented and is supposed to run from 2015 to 2020 and achieve those goals. It's key part of 14 legislative proposals. Wi-Fi for You is one of them. I would like to introduce you to the others so you get a feeling of the scope that the projects usually aim for. In May 2016, geo-blocking was abolished to actually allow free access to services amongst the entire European Union. In July 2016, eIDAS, the Electronic Identification, Authentication and Trust Service Protocol, and the standardization for exchange of trusted information within the European Union was established. In June 2007, the European Union abolished roaming regulations so that you can use your smartphone without paying extra. In March 2018, Wi-Fi for You was supposed to go live, and Wi-Fi for You funded networks are supposed to be free of charge, free of advertising, and free of personal data, which is amazing. And you might have heard of it, in May 2018, the GDPR, the so-called Datenschutzverordnung, became part of the European Union. You might have heard about that in the news, which is basically standardizing the use of personal data within the European Union. And what also happened in September 2018 is the European Copyright Directive passed Parliament, and it included the link tags at the upload filters. You might have heard about that. If you would like to hear more about it, I recommend visiting the website of Julia Rida, who is a member of the European Parliament and has extensively documented what this means for the internet. And since December 2018, we have the e-evidence basically set of rules which just passed the Council of the European Union. And it's supposed to allow law enforcement of the EU member states to actually get their hands on digital footprints of whatever crimes have been committed. So what was the plan? Jean-Claude Juncker, as the president of the European Commission, announced that everyone is benefiting from connectivity, and it means that it should, no matter where you live, how much you earn, so that they propose to equip every village in Europe and every city with free wireless internet access around the main centers of public life by 2020. They also said that the Wi-Fi for EU networks will be free of charge, free of advertising, and free of personal data. At this point, we were joking at Freifunk that we should actually ask him to become an honorary member of the Freifunk movement, because this is what we're trying to be doing for a couple of years. But since he's Jean-Claude Juncker and the president of the European Commission and not just some digital hippies who do stuff in their free time, the idea was to implement a European Union-wide standard. Now, the interesting question is, how the fuck do you do that? If the European Union wants to implement stuff, they usually have two ways to do it. They can either use a carrot or a stick. Since they want people to do something and we're still living in a free society, the carrot they usually use is called money. You might be familiar with the concept. In detail, the plan was to spend 120 million euro on the project now, which is 15,000 euros which they're going to give to every city or town that's going to implement Wi-Fi for EU. They wanted to issue those 120 million euros in 5 calls, so it's roughly something about 20, 22 million on each call. The first call was supposed to happen in May 2018. It was never intended to fully finance the installation. It was supposed to be extra money for keeping Wi-Fi for EU standard with the Wi-Fi installation you're heading for. And the Wi-Fi funded network should be free of charge, free of advertising, and free of personal data use. And they even had extremely well-written language in the legal drawings, because they said that security and data protection risks should be addressed. And the scheme will ensure full protection of personal data and sufficient level of authentication to ensure the user-friendliness of the connection at the access point level, which sounds amazing. You could guess that they actually had thought about the question of authenticating the network to the user, and they had learned the lessons that were there to be learned from Wi-Fi-based IMSI catchers or anything like that. There's a nice paper from Oxford about the problem. This really matters because EU standards have normative effects. Just to give you an idea of how the European Union actually influences our daily lives, we pay with euros, you might have heard of that. The GDPR spawned data protection laws in China, Brazil, and California, China of all places. Deutsche Telekom is now not obligated to preserve data due to European Union rules, and actually fought for that right in Cologne in April. And the fact that the Deutsche Telekom is becoming a data privacy advocate is worth it in itself. And this program is just the beginning of Wi-Fi for EU if you look at the other projects. 120 million euro are not that much money in the European Union budget, and it's usually just a starting phase. Programs like this run for 5 to 10 years. So since we have established why it matters, why it's done, and where it's coming from, let's see where and when and how it went wrong. There are the certain ways it went wrong. So we had the network authentication in 2017, and we had a press release that said that everything was supposed to be free of personal data. Then the first call was announced for the 15th of March in 2018, which was supposed to be a small part of the program, just 1,000 cities to start with, to get it running, a running prototype, so to speak, spend 50 million euros, start on the small scale. Well, on the 25th of April, the technical specifications were given out, at least the first part, which said that in the second stage, from that 2019 onwards, there is supposed to be a common authentication platform that will be set up for the use of the wireless network. I'm not entirely sure how happy you are with the idea that you have to authenticate yourself to actually use a wireless network. There are several issues with that. First of all, this is not, at least to my and the understanding of some other people, GDPR compliant. There is no technical need to authenticate yourself to the network with a username if you want to use Wi-Fi for you. So why would you do that? There's a problem with the GDPR. It's not fiscally responsible. Running authentication servers for public Wi-Fi networks costs a ton of money, and there's no reason to do that. And there's also no reason to pay the people who can do that. There's better work for those. You could see these as hidden subsidies, because there are very few competitors in each country that can actually handle the massive server load Wi-Fi for you is going to produce. And it could be called some kind of national security issue, because the centralized login data of all citizens of a new country is not a data trove I want to exist. And it's a single point of failure in your IT infrastructure. Why, if you want to provide nationwide or European Union-wide wireless access, do you actually need an authentication server? There's no need for that in any way. So those are five ways this went wrong. The other ones are even more entertaining. On the 30th of April, which is 2 weeks before the call was supposed to go live, and way too late for anyone to actually form an informed opinion about this program or get any backlash in, the technical specifications of the captive portal were defined. First of all, this is the first mentioning of the existence of a captive portal within the wireless infrastructure. And those are really stupid, because captive portals, for example, inhibit innovation. If this is supposed to be the standard of the European Union in the 21st century for running public wireless, why do they exclude IoT devices? IoT devices usually cannot make it around captive portals, and open wireless is the public infrastructure. Then there's the inclusion question. Captive portals are hard to come by if you're not savvy with your smartphone, if your eyesight is not too well, if you have issues with touch screens. Captive portals actually exclude people from using wireless. So why put them in there? Oh, also legacy devices can sometimes not just work with them. So what are the next things you can do? You can note that there's also an IT security risk. Protocols like DNSSEC, for example, don't handle captive portals well if you set them up wrongly. There are ways you can set up captive portals so that they don't interfere with DNSSEC, but that's not that easy and it needs to be done properly. And given the other specifications we're about to see, it cannot be ensured that this is going to happen. So these are 8 of the 13 ways that this thing went wrong. Let's see about the other 5. Just one side note, because it always comes up in the discussions. The inhibition of IoT devices is not solved by the newly defined WPA3 standard, because IoT devices by definition have a small energy usage, and WPA3 actually is built on communication between the access point and the device. IoT devices will not be able to do that. The technical specifications also included that there is an embedded snippet for which the European Commission will be able to control the work of the network within the captive portal. This means that you're going to have some kind of JavaScript running in there, which is an IT security problem, because it's a potential backdoor into the access point. So you can basically address the access point and get metadata of its users out of the access point. JavaScript is not known to be the most secure framework. Well, so those are 9 of the 13 ways, but it gets better. Also, Wi-Fi 4U branding is required. This sounds entirely sane at the first spot, because you actually want your Wi-Fi to actually be named after you. That's completely fine. The problem with the Wi-Fi 4U SSID is that if you start with the Wi-Fi 4U SSID and you have an embedded snippet on your captive portal, you have no form of authentication. It basically democratizes hacking because it's way too easy to set up a honeypot. If I want to use a Wi-Fi 4U network and I expect it to have a captive portal on which there's an embedded snippet running, and I'm going to first get relocated and then go into the internet, there are not many ways for the user of a mobile device to realize that they're not tapping into a honeypot. If this is what I have to expect, there's not much I can do to protect myself to have all my traffic data analyzed. Yeah, and so we're at 10 of 13 points all this went wrong. So the last point that we got is that a week before this call should have happened, they released another part of the technical specifications, which included that Wi-Fi 4U is supposed to comply with the Hotspot 2.0 standard. Complying with the Hotspot 2.0 standard would mean that you have to get certified by the Passpoint Wi-Fi Alliance program, which is not too nice because it's a proprietary standard, but there are industry standards that work. WPA is one of them. So why is this a problem? Well, first of all, there's a GDPR problem which is built into Hotspot 2.0. Hotspot 2.0 is the first standard that sees your mobile device as the mobile device that it is and not as a multi-channel thing that are accidentally running on the same system. For example, Hotspot 2.0 aims you to allow to enter a building, and if you're calling a person, reroute your call from your mobile signal to your wireless signal to your Wi-Fi signal so that your call doesn't get dropped. It sounds perfect if it would be transparent. But due to the fact that it allows for so-called connection roaming, it allows to steer the traffic between connection times like Wi-Fi, mobile, Bluetooth, NFC, LTE, and all that. It's proprietary, so it's unclear how this roaming is, the steering is done. The conjecture you could build is that mobile traffic is expensive, and Hotspot 2.0 can be used to pass traffic from mobile to VLAN, which might be reasonable. But since the steering process is not transparent, we cannot exclude the question of whether or not this is basically a subsidization of mobile providers. There are perfect good reasons to switch traffic from mobile to wireless if it's beneficial to the connection, but if it's not handled transparently, it could be some kind of subsidization scheme behind it. So this is the point where I basically take down my aloha hat and we talk about some other things again. Hotspot 2.0 allows you to circumvent captive portals. That's amazing. Hotspot 2.0 basically takes care of all your authentication with the access point, but you're not going to be bothered with a captive portal anymore. The problem is only state-of-the-art smartphones have Hotspot 2.0. So we have basically a two-class open wireless network. Poor people get captive portals, rich people get auto-logins. Getting an auto-login might be a GDPR problem if you're really, really, really data conscious, but that's a bit ugly. So those are 12 ways this actually got fucked up. Now to number 13. Number 13 is fresh and new off the shelf and happened in December. It's going to be the best one. So we're going to look at what happened to get to number 13. And you can be all happy with finding a lucky number. The first call was supposed to go live on the 15th of May, and the homepage crashed. So a month later, the call got canceled, and there was a press release, because due to the fact of the crashing of the homepage, not all municipalities were able to actually obtain their vouchers. The second call was... Then things happened rather rapidly. On the beginning of September, they announced a so-called open market consultation until the 5th of October, where they wanted to see if people were actually thinking that they could do what they were asking. On the 11th of October, they announced a second call, which was supposed to happen from the 7th to the 9th of November of 2018. They had 2,800 vouchers and 42 million packed into it, because they had wanted to spend 120 million until 2020. You kind of have to get going, right? On the 7th of December, the winners of the call are announced. And this is exactly my kind of humor. Because what also was announced on the 7th of December is that the regulation on cross-border access of e-evidence is agreed upon by the Council of the European Union. And this is a really merry Christmas present. To see what it does, I would like to give you a short excourse into Civics 101. I'm sorry it was boring you with all the legal stuff, but then you have to see the kicker. If you look at the modern societies we're living in, we have a separation of powers, which is the bedrock of the state we live in. Then you have an executive branch, a legislative branch, a judicial branch, and all they form together the state. Then there is this part which is called companies or the economy, all those funny people who actually do work and earn money. And now if someone wants to obtain data about a person, what usually happens is that the executive branch asks the judicial branch if they can please go for it. The judicial branch gives them a go and tells the company that they have to hand the money back to the executive branch. This is what also happens if your dorm gets searched or your house gets searched or you have fun with the police. And it's bad enough as it is. If you're not happy with the current state of affairs, you can probably join people like Constanze, who gave a nice talk about the fact that the new law enforcement rules are already bad enough. Now, the European Union has created a digital single market, and of course they would like to address the case, what's going to happen if you have an executive in state A that wants to obtain some information that is actually in the possession of a company in state B. Now, this is a bit complicated because they're not part of the same state, there's no judicial branch you could ask to get a warrant, and it's not entirely clear what you could do. So they opted for the easy solution. The executive branch is contacting the company directly, and they have to reply in less than 6 hours. Given the fact that those Wi-Fi for you networks you spoke about earlier are supposed to be run by companies, this means that an part of law enforcement from any state in the European Union could contact the company running any of the Wi-Fi for you networks and please ask them to hand over data they see fit to know about without any checks or balances within 6 hours. You might also feel like this. So, this is the public story as it happened from the media sources. I would like now to give a short idea about what has been done and what hopefully will be done in the future. So what has been done is that we've been in the contact with the European Commission since 2017. We actually wrote them nice emails about why central authentication is bad, and they kind of agree. Like, yeah, we see your point. Thanks for pointing that out. We'll get in touch with you if we have further questions, which they actually did. On the 5th of April, in the beginning of April, they sent us the technical specifications that they were planning to implement and ask for our feedback, which we gave them. And they still implemented the technical specifications that we told them not to. After that, we contacted several members of the European Parliament, which are Julia Reda, Sabine Verheyen, Arne Kohn, and Timo Böcken, who are basically responsible for the area of Aachen, or who are usually the ones who say that the internet is the people they're responsible for. And they told the European Commission to please talk with us. Unfortunately, to no avail. Julia Rieder was already so nice to facilitate a visit of us and speaking to some members of the European Commission directly in Brussels, but it did not yield too much of an effect in the long run, apparently. We participated in the open market consultation and told them that they have unreasonably high, expensive plans for that, and all this didn't help. So what do you do today? You go to Twitter and you vent it. On the 7th of November, Jimmy Schultz, who is the head of the Council for the Digital Agenda of the Bundestag, actually announced that Wi-Fi for you is now live and every municipality in Germany should apply to get the grant because free wireless is important. So someone told him, like, yeah, please check out the technical specifications. This is nonsense. Well, the guy actually knows what he's doing. So he agreed, like, yeah, this is fucked up. He sent a parliamentary inquiry to the Bundesregierung and asked them about it. The reply from the Bundesregierung was, well, it's the European Union. They know what they're going to be doing. Anke Domscheit back tweeted that if there are any questions that we would like her to ask, she would do that. So we told her, yeah, there's a question, actually. Please do. And she actually asked this question in the Committee for the Digital Agenda, kind of replaced. I still would like to, I don't know, get her a mate if I see her around here. And on the 14th of this month, Timmy Schulz actually wrote an open letter to Giovanni Bugatelli, who is the European Data Protection Officer. So the guy who is in charge for all kind of data protection issues of the European Union. We haven't heard the answer yet. There was Christmas and all that thing, you might have noticed. So this has been done so far, and we're looking where this is going. And yeah, so there are things you can do. This is a call to action, please. You can write your member of the European Parliament and ask them about Wi-Fi for you and make them ask the European Commission. Because you come from all over Europe, hopefully, or you see me on the internet and you come from all over Europe and you can write to the member of the European Parliament. You can check out if your town is a winner and got a Wi-Fi for you grant. And if that is the case, please contact the responsible persons or the people who have the responsibilities within your municipality and tell them about the problems with the program. And if you get them to basically hand back the money to the European Commission, saying something like, this is a data breach problem, we're not going to touch the money, we're going to give it back, please tell me so we can tell the press, because they're going to be very happy about it. And you find any small town that's refusing 15,000 euros from the European Union because they think that the program is flawed, that would be great. You can write to the European Commission. They actually have a page where you can ask them questions. Do that. Go ahead. You can use ASCEU, which is a mandatory bylaw pronounced way to ask questions to the European Commission, which they have to answer. You have to phrase those rather carefully because they are obliged to answer those, give you answers on that. And they're obliged to put it on the record what they answer you. But it might be fun just to ask around the program so they notice that people might be unhappy and that there is public interest. One could formulate a petition if anyone has time to actually run a full-fledged political campaign, because so far this has basically been a one-troll show. Or you could join the discussion at the workshop that happened this afternoon. I'm sorry. But you could contact me. Yeah, so if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. I think there's some time left.
Was there much outcome from the workshop earlier, do you know?
There's a mailing list. There is an Etherpad where information is gathered. People thought about setting up a website and contacting people, contacting members of the European Parliament that might be interested in all kind of digital issues. And there were some NGOs listed that should be of interest to get in contact with. And it's well, getting a bit more awareness thanks to this wonderful Congress. There's a question in the last row.
Do you suppose that there is any hope to fix it anyway? So, or is it a totally hopeless effort?
Well, someone pointed out to me a Golem article this afternoon. Within the Golem article, it says that there is someone from the press secretary of the European Commission who said that some kind of authentication is required to obtain minimal control of the usage of the public Wi-Fi hotspots. To me, this sounds like wording that's from the push which is coming from clandestine services all over Europe to limit anonymous usage of the internet. But to my understanding, we still live in a state of law or in a union of laws, and I think that the GDPR might be a good smackdown. Besides that, I think that we are hopefully having enough politicians who try to get them get noticed before the upcoming European Union election. So I think that this might become a political topic and could hopefully enter into a discussion. The point I see is that with the way the program is set up, I'm afraid that it might actually fail. The infrastructure that's proposed and the information we've gathered so far is, for example, saying that if you run a Wi-Fi 4U network, you're only allowed to have one additional SSID. So any kind of modern wireless infrastructure is basically not able to include it. And I would really, really, really not like to see this program fail, because I think the goal is a noble one. But if they handle it with the skill and efficiency they have handled it thus far, I presume that establishing open wireless all over Europe is just going to happen faster without the European Union in it. Because so far it's just 120 million euros, and the hassle that you get into for the 15,000 bucks that I want to give you is not worth it if people make it painful. And if it goes through the press and it's a discussed program, 15,000 euros are not that much money, even for a small town. So it might actually fail for the better, but I still hope it can be fixed.
There were multiple mentions of free of personal data. I personally did not understand how do you get a network free of personal data? What is meant by that?
Since the press release is not a scientific paper or a technical paper, there are not definitions to the terms used. The way I would understand it and the way other people have understood it is that no kind of data that's supposed to be allowing you to be identified as a person is used within the process of handling you. Your signal Freifunk, for example, doesn't require you to authenticate yourself.
So it's still possible to transmit personal data, like checking personal emails via this Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, but the network layer and the information layer use it for has nothing to do with each other.
Okay.
I have another question about honeypotting. There were mentioned that it would be trivial to conquer these. As far as I'm aware, networks can identify each one. Networks can like have some sort of certificate that only with this SSID requires.
Networks can have that. But it's not in the technical specifications of Wi-Fi for you that it's supposed to have it.
Thank you. Huh? It's part of Hotspot 2.0, sure. But if you still want to support legacy devices, then those legacy devices will not be able to use that network. So supposedly, which is not said anywhere, we assume that there will be some kind of way for legacy devices to also connect to that using some kind of captive portal or something the like. And that would be different then, but Hotspot 2.0 does, then that could be used for honeypotting, of course. You could try to cheat those legacy devices connected to your network and then present them something looking like the captive portal and basically fish the user credentials by that. But on Hotspot 2.0, that would be more difficult because there you actually do have a certificate and it would at least be retaining the security of the first connection. And ideally, the certificate would actually be issued by some kind of certification authority which signs it for the SSID used, and then even the first connection would be hard to honeypot.
What's the reason given for just allowing one SSID?
Can you hear me again? Okay. Yeah.
There are no reasons given. They don't argue why they do this thing the way they do it. Any further questions, or do we want to switch the... Okay.
So, how can Freifunk create public, free, secure Wi-Fi all over Europe instead?
Well, this is one of the questions we've been trying to address in the workshop. Unfortunately, we're not able to so far provide a way how it could be better, but I think that you could do it without the centralized authentication. You could, because there's no need to have an authentication if you want to provide free wireless to the public. You could do some airtime shaping so that people don't abuse it to download movies, if that's your problem, but there's no need, if you want to bring wireless connectivity into the public domain, to have any form of authentication. There's also no need to have any form of captive portal. Just because we're used to it, it doesn't mean that they have to be there. And if the European Union wants to set up a digital infrastructure for the 21st century, they should be doing that. They should have a digital infrastructure that allows the usage of IoT devices and not block them. And you can just scrap those out and leave the rest of the technical specifications and you still get a rather fine network. But you don't need captive portals, you don't need a centralized authentication infrastructure. You can talk about Hotspot 2.0, but if you implement Hotspot 2.0, you should make transparent how it's supposed to be used. And if you do that, if you just basically scrap the parts which you identify to be a problem, like captive portals, which can be circumvented by Hotspot 2.0, you could just kind of have a more efficient and leaner system by basically cutting off requirements that you don't need in the first place. Why would you need to authenticate yourself to just use wireless? It's not e-government services. There's no need for that. If you do that, you can cut off all the interconnection between the systems. You can not have to run centralized authentication infrastructure services. You just don't need it. It takes a moment because you don't replace it with something, but if you look at it from a distance, you can just cut it out and leave the rest be, let the rest be, and you'll find that the rest is not harmed by it. And you can also just switch off captive portals because you don't need them. They're just hindering you. And there is no judicial reason to do that. Yeah. So that would be my thing. No authentication, no captive portal. You could use the rest, perhaps tweak a bit on the outskirts, have an expert consultation, an open one, and then you could get a desirable and good infrastructure.
Is there any political backing for an alternative plan for such a Wi-Fi for EU 2.0 or something like this, where you can say, okay, now we restart it and we make it better and perhaps rethink it totally, backed by some political party which perhaps likes to be elected in the next European election?
I'm not aware of that. So far, I think the issue has not risen to the level of parties as political entities noticing the issue. So far, we're fighting to get single elected members of parliaments to get to see the issue. But I presume that the open letter from a member of the Bundestag to Mr. Just get the name right, Buratelli might actually make some noise, because this is a letter that cannot be ignored anymore. And if states actually start to find problems in their courts with the concept that is proposed and are thus excluded from using the funding money, the European Union gets into the problem that the funding of the European Union has to be distributed equally, and if they set it up in a way so a state can't use it, especially if it's a state like Germany, which is kind of more powerful than the European Union, then the discussion might restart. And I think that the program is not going to be revamped as, oh, we did something messy and now we're going to have Wi-Fi for you 2.0. But they are going to put out something like, due to the massive amount of development of technology within the wireless network sector, we have redrawn the rules for the technical specifications, and now here are the new technical specifications for the 21st century, and please go ahead. I think that's going to be more of the way it's going to go. But if you have any kind of political powerhouse in your back pocket on the European level, please, please let us know. Yeah. Are there any more questions, or do we want to switch to a more informal setting? Well, thanks for your time. And before that... Yeah. One last thing. The input in this talk is the collaborative work of about 24 people who pointed out several small issues with the entire program. So it's not just me.